You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
I'm Dave Raymond. Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the American League East. With Brittany Giroli to talk about all things Orioles, the winter meetings here. And really the story about Baltimore has been the guys that they have lost. But let's talk about what they're trying to accomplish. You've had a chance to talk a little bit with Buck Showalter, but Dan DeKett's been in the middle of everything. What is going on right now with the Orioles?
Yeah, well, it's been an interesting winter, and they really haven't signed anybody of note. Obviously, two big losses, Nelson Cruz, Nick Markakis. They need to fill those holes. They need to come out with an outfielder. And most of their talks here at the winter meetings have been centered around getting another outfielder. A DH type, obviously, would be big as well, but they're trying to fill that hole. They're trying to add a little bit more relief pitching. And then, of course, a contingency plan in the event that Matt Wieters, who had season-ending Tommy John surgery in early June, isn't ready to start the season. They need another catcher there. So they've had a lot of talks about four or five different trade scenarios, but it looks like they'll probably sign a free agent, at least to fill their outfield hole. They feel like they know where the market is right now in free agency, and they seem prepared to at least pay what that's going to be. But I think it's going to come down to Cabrera, how Melky kind of sets the market, and then the rest of those dominoes will fall.
Are they in on Cabrera, or are there some other names that we can talk about?
There's some other names, but certainly they have interest in Cabrera, a younger guy than some of the guys that they lost. 4 or 5 years is a lot to commit to him. That's apparently what he wants on the market. The Orioles have been hesitant to do that. They lost both Nelson Cruz and Nick Markakis because they wouldn't go for that fourth year. So it'll be interesting to see if they'd be willing to do that with a guy like Cabrera, who is younger, has more upside, you can argue, than both of those guys. But there's also the second tier, the Johnny Gomes, the Chris DeNorfia, the other guys who are available in the outfield. Delman Young is a guy who they spoke with yesterday. They'd like to bring back more on a short-term deal. I think they want to avoid those long commitments. They know that window is now. They don't want to get bogged down with too many future contracts.
Okay, so they seem committed to going the free agent route. Does that mean that they're not particularly engaged with the Justin Uptons, the Marlon Byrds, the Matt Kemps of the world?
Well, Matt Kemp and Justin Upton, you can kind of take that pencil and scratch your name right through them. Duquette is pretty good about saying emphatically if something is incorrect, and that's what he's done about Upton. Kemp is another case where they weren't willing to give Nick Markakis 4 years because of concerns over physicality and his neck and things like that. Matt Kemp has a history of injuries as well, would require quite a haul that they're not willing to give up. Marlon Byrd, on the other hand, is an older guy, wouldn't command nearly as much as a Matt Kemp, and they did have discussions with the Phillies yesterday about him. That's something that doesn't look like it's on the front burner for them, but it's certainly an option.
You know, we can talk all day about the numbers, Nelson Cruz and Nick Markakis, you know, and replacing that element. But is there an additional element to losing some of those guys that Showalter would be concerned about?
Absolutely. Showalter said yesterday, when asked about how tough is it to keep that chemistry together now, he said that's going to be one of his biggest challenges, is making sure that the morale is high, that the rest of the guys on the team know that the Orioles want to win still, that this isn't just a one and done, we're happy being competitive type of team anymore. And a lot of that, of course, centers around the offseason moves. You see how easy it is now for the Cubs players to be fired up over the signing of John Lester. Well, it works the other way as well. Players were not happy losing Nelson Cruz. Players were really not happy losing Nick Markakis, a guy who had been there for 9 years. So in addition to the moves they make, Buck's going to really have to do a good job of making sure everyone's on the same page, knowing why the organization did this, why they think they're going to be better. That's a big part of it, because of course winning sparks that morale, but you've got to create that atmosphere that lets you know that we are going for it once again.
Okay, and you already mentioned Matt Wieters coming back from the Tommy John surgery and the hopes that maybe he's back around opening day. Manny Machado being healthy could be a huge lift. Chris Davis, you know, and in Davis's case, there might be a little more play here. He might have a little something maybe he wants to prove this season.
Absolutely. And, you know, Buck Showalter had golf with him on Saturday over the weekend. So he spoke with Davis recently, and he feels like he's in a good place. And I agree with you. I think there's something to be said for a guy who had such a down year, was counted out, will be serving the last game of that 25-game suspension on opening day. And let's not forget, This is his final year of arbitration as well. This is his final year under team control. So you take into account that. That's a lot of external motivation as well. He's playing for a contract. He's playing for potentially a huge payday. And when you look at that, I think Chris Davis is going to have a bounce back year. There's just too many factors pointing that way for him not to. And when you take that into account, couple it with Matt Wieters, Manny Machado, who both should be ready about opening day, maybe a week or two after. This Orioles team has already gotten better, and I think people forget that.
Yeah. We've talked about, seems like, all the position players, right, in the movement and the losses in that respect. But Andrew Miller, and it's not like Andrew Miller has been an Oriole all his life or anything, but he was very productive in his time in Baltimore. And what does that mean now, and how does that affect the makeup of that bullpen?
It affects it a lot. I mean, he was huge. As you said, he wasn't there very long, but he was a guy who was shut down for them. And he lefties, righties, it didn't matter. He was very much the difference between the 2014 Orioles and the 2012 Orioles that didn't advance past the division series. And when you look at what they have left, their priority is upgrading that bullpen, is adding another left-hander, adding another right-hander. You're not going to replace an Andrew Miller. There's a reason why he made such good money on the free agent market. He is a commodity. He's a rare guy. But I think what they're going to try to do is take a right-handed reliever, a left-handed reliever, try and plug those holes, because they do have setup man Darren O'Day returning. They do have first-year closer Zach Britton coming back. Both of those guys fairly cheap. Both of those guys still under contract. O'Day, he had his option picked up. Britton still arbitration eligible. So those are guys they're going to lean on. Tommy Hunter, of course, is another guy to hopefully patch things up. But they've been big on that bullpen. It's a big thing of Buck Showalter's to make sure that bullpen is healthy, gets through the season, and really helps carry them through rough patches with that rotation.
Yeah, the rotation they seem fairly comfortable with. How comfortable are they with Britton as the full-time closer?
I think they're very comfortable. When you look at what he was able to do, I know he had some missteps in the postseason, but Darren O'Day did as well, and a lot of that has to do with the Royals just seemingly finding every hole imaginable. He wasn't hit particularly hard. He kept his composure, and most of all, when you look at the regular season, he avoided back-to-back blown saves. He was able to really avoid those long losing spells that can sink a team. And so he was very impressive. Unorthodox a little bit as a lefty sinker baller in that role, but he did such a good job. I don't think anyone is thinking, hey, let's try and unseat Britton, or maybe we should move him back into the rotation. I think he's a bullpen guy. He really found his niche, and I think he's going to continue to get better in that role.
Okay, so many headlines for the Baltimore Orioles. What about the guys maybe not in the headlines who can help? Steve Pierce did a great job, almost a .380 on base percentage last year. They talk about maybe Christian Walker being a guy who can contribute in the near future. Dariel Alvarez, the Cuban kid, where are they with some of these other names that we could look for as being contributors?
Well, Alvarez is an interesting name, because part of the reason they felt okay letting Markakis go is knowing that Dariel Alvarez was down there in Double-A, and while he might need a little bit more seasoning, I think it's possible, entirely possible, that you see him this season contributing to the big league club. You mentioned Mike Wright, Tyler Wilson. Those two guys were added to the 40-man roster, protecting them from the Rule 5 draft, which shows you that the Orioles feel like they would be coveted by other clubs, and again, they are part of the short-term plan. Maybe not this year, but if not, then the following year. So those are guys to definitely keep on the radar. Dylan Bundy is a guy that we don't mention a whole lot. Still rehabbing back, had a rough year last year, but he should be a full go. He's expected to compete for the big league team this year. I expect him to be on the Orioles at some point this year. And him, coupled with Kevin Gausman, who has graduated from that prospect status, should make an enviable rotation. I mean, these are guys who were projected to be top of the rotation type of arms. So that should really help the Orioles starting staff.
Okay, well, it's been a couple of exciting years for the Orioles, and now one of the wildest off seasons in recent memory for the Baltimore Orioles. Great stuff, Brittany. Appreciate it. With Brian Hoke, and I don't know what we're going to talk about with the Yankees. Oftentimes, very little to discuss.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll find something.
Oh, man. So there's some names being bandied about. Now, the primary goal right now for Brian Cashman, rotation, bullpen, what's the focus?
I think all of the above. The Yankees came here to the winter meetings, pitching, pitching, pitching. That's what Brian Cashman said. Obviously, you'd like to shore up that starting rotation. You've got questions there with Masahiro Tanaka and CeCe Sabathia. The bullpen, you let Dave Robertson now go. Get Andrew Miller in the mix. You've had Dylan Betances. He was an all-star last year, but those guys have two career saves between the two of them. some questions to be answered on the pitching side. There's also some position player issues they'd like to clear up, but right now it's pitching, pitching, pitching.
It is fascinating. You mentioned the two combined saves by Miller and Betances, and I think most people would agree, you know, they have a lot. They're very toolsy, right? Those guys, many would project, could handle the role. But they had Robertson, who had proven it, high-pressure situation, following the greatest of all time. I think everybody understands the compensation pick that they get by letting him walk, but it seems a high risk for a job that he had already proven he could do.
Yeah, I think there was no question he could do the job. Robertson proved he could do it. The strikeout numbers were terrific. He did it in New York, which I think you cannot discount. You know, he didn't go 39 out of 44 by accident. I think when you look at how the compensation is now working, and players like Aaron Judge and Ian Clarkin are now two of the Yankees' best prospects. They came as compensation for losing Rafael Soriano and Nick Swisher. So I think the Yankees are looking at that. They say we could have a player like that next June and also have Andrew Miller, who is very good. I think we would all agree, especially the last 2 years, he's been dominant. Having that combination instead of Robertson, I think they saw that as a win and paying less money on top of that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they still do have plenty of money. There still are some big names out there, Sergio Romo, Jonathan Papelbon, you know, those are some of the bigger names, I guess. Are they in on those guys?
Yeah, I think you can throw Jason Grilli in there, too. You know, these are guys out there with proven closer ability. Romo and Grilli are two of the free agent options out there. Luke Gregerson came off the board. He's not exactly a bona fide closer anyway. With Papelbon, that's an interesting case for me, I think. A lot of Yankee fans, I'm not sure how they'd react to that one. That would have to be a trade with the Phillies, but there's a guy who last year said he would welcome a trade to a contender, and clearly the Yankees think they're going to be that next year.
Okay, well, let's move to the starting pitching concerns. There are still names out there, and you know, the big name has come off the board, but that is now, we all feel, will unleash the opportunities. What are the Yankees doing when it comes to starting pitching?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. The Lester situation, you never exactly saw them linked to him, but I always kind of wanted to leave a light on because you've seen those things happen before, you know. It was a few years ago that Brian Cashman ducked out of the Bellagio in Las Vegas and wound up putting a lot of money on CC Sabathia's doorstep. So the Yankees never got into the Lester thing. I thought he would have been a good fit. Right now, you're looking at Max Scherzer, James Shields. Those are the big names out there. Seems like the Yankees are going for the second tier right now. They've talked about guys who were on last year's team, bringing them back. You're looking at Brandon McCarthy and maybe Chris Capuano. They haven't heard from Hiroki Kuroda, but I think there would be interest there on some level. So right now, I think your big target is McCarthy, but, you know, I mean, Max Scherzer, that's a guy that the Yankees like a lot. I could see them going hard after him. I think it takes convincing Hal Steinbrenner to open up the checkbook one more time.
There's another big change afoot for the Yankees, and that would be, you know, after these many years with Derek Jeter at shortstop, Didi Gregorius is the man. And what is the feeling on how he'll handle all the pressure that is likely to come along with trying to replace a guy like Jeter?
Yeah, there'll be pressure to come along, but I think you can't go out there thinking I'm replacing Derek Jeter. You have to go out there and just be, you know, you have to be Didi Gregorius. And for that, you know, he's a guy, very athletic. He's 24. He's young. You know, he's a good-looking prospect. The Diamondbacks liked him a lot. The fielding is terrific. The Yankees think the bat will come around. You're probably looking at, to start the year, he'll be in a platoon with Brendan Ryan. Brendan Ryan would hit against left-handed pitching. That's something that Gregorius has not done very well. You know, it's hard to follow a legend like Derek Jeter, you know. David Robertson did a good job in following Mariano Rivera. It's not easy. So I think there's going to be a lot of pressure. The easiest thing Gregorius can do is get a couple big hits in April, and I think everybody will kind of take a step back and say, look, he's not Derek Jeter. Who is? But this guy's pretty good, too.
I don't even know if it's worth asking, because you figure the Yankees can be in on any name that is out there. And we've talked mostly pitching. But are they in the sweepstakes, in the hunt for some bats, a guy like Chase Headley?
Yeah, there's interest in bringing Chase Headley back. I think, you know, when he came last year, the reviews on him were that he had obviously struggled here in San Diego. The Yankees actually said the defense was average. He was very much above average from what I saw. You're looking at a guy who's probably going to take a four-year deal to get. But with the Alex Rodriguez situation, you don't really know what he is at third base. You have Martin Prado. He could play third base. He's done a lot of it in his big league career. But I think if you have the chance to put a proven guy like Chase Headley in your lineup, look, he'll make that lineup better. He'll make that clubhouse better. They liked a lot of what they saw the last 2 months of the year, and I think there's interest in having more of that.
And we got more than halfway through this thing without mentioning Alex Rodriguez.
Oh, sorry.
How does he affect the moves and the expectations?
I think he's a huge question mark. You don't know. The Yankees don't know. I don't know. Brian Cashman doesn't know. Joe Girardi doesn't know. I think he could be anything under the sun. He could be your third baseman for 150 games. More likely, look, he's going to turn 40 in July. He's coming off. He's played 30 games in the last 2 years. I think there's a big question. Can he come back and be anything like he was? I'm not saying his MVP years, but can he be 2013 Alex? And if he can, and if he can play 80 to 100 games and be reliable and play some third base, I think that's a huge plus. If you're looking at a guy who cannot play the field anymore and is just a DH, look, they'll work around that. He's got 3 years left on that contract. They'll make do with it. But ideally, you would want him to come in, be able to play at least some third base if he's not the everyday guy, hit for power. And look, those 30 games at the end of 2013, he was pretty productive. If you had that on last year's team, he would have been one of the best hitters in that lineup. So I think that's what the Yankees have to hope for.
Okay, as we wrap it up, how about the future of guys like David Phelps and Adam Warren?
Yeah, they're going to come into spring training. They're going to prepare as starting pitchers. I think, look, you have to look at depth. The Yankees used, I think, a baker's dozen of starting pitchers last year because 4/5 of their entire rotation went down. They bring them into camp. They've proven they can start. They can relieve, definitely. You know, it's easier to transition a guy from a starter into a bullpen. You can just cut them down rather than building them back up. So they'll come in. They'll compete for the back end of the rotation. I don't think it's a finished product by any means, but they'll be in the mix.
Okay, great update on the Yankees, Brian. I know there's plenty more to come in the coming weeks.
There always is.
Yeah, no doubt about it. With Gregor Chisholm talking about the Blue Jays. Now, we're in San Diego with the winter meetings. It's winter technically here, but winter comes a lot earlier in Toronto. And to that end, Alex Anthopoulos has been very busy, got a lot done well before these meetings. And the biggest piece of news was certainly the signing of Russell Martin.
Yeah, absolutely. And Anthopoulos typically likes to get most of his work done before the meetings, and that's been the case this year. I mean, they were very aggressive with Martin early on. He was their clear-cut number one target, something that the Blue Jays haven't typically done throughout the course of Anthopoulos' tenure. They haven't really made major splashes through free agency, but this year they did, and he was the guy that they went after very strong and very hard very early on. Got him to a five-year contract, $82 million. I mean, this is a team under Anthopoulos had never gone more than 3 years, never gone more than like $15 million on a free agent contract before. So this is kind of a step out of the realm that they are normally in, but it kind of shows that Anthopoulos really wants to take advantage of the current window of opportunity this team has. And by adding guys like Martin into the mix, they're trying to take advantage of those prime years of guys like Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion and really trying to attack right now.
Recent years, it's been trades, and they made some big news in the trade market. I think expectations were ramped up a couple years ago, but as you point out now, going out and spending money on Martin, they make another trade again this year, getting Josh Donaldson from Oakland. And now, as you start to piece together this lineup, I can't envision another lineup in baseball that's going to be able to match the power and strength of this one top to bottom. How does Donaldson affect where everybody slots now?
Yeah, and I mean, this is a lineup that over the last couple of years that was one of the best in baseball, and they've arguably strengthened it, even though they're going to lose a guy like Melky Cabrera. And they've lost Adam Lind. I mean, replacing them with Russell Martin and then especially Donaldson in this particular case, I mean, that really just strengthens everything out. So now you're really looking at, you know, an order that starts with Jose Reyes, then Russell Martin, then Jose Bautista, then probably Josh Donaldson, then Edwin Encarnacion. I mean, 1 through 5, there's probably nobody better in baseball right now, or they're at least in the conversation for one of those top teams. So they still have to lengthen that lineup out a little bit. They're going to need to get some production from the guys at the bottom part of that order. But I mean, Donaldson, I think, caught everybody by surprise because this was a guy who wasn't expected to be available in baseball. But, you know, Anthopoulos was aggressive with that, too. He acquired multiple times and eventually found a way to find common ground with Billy Bean and get a deal done.
add to it in the mix. Saunders, which makes Melky Cabrera expendable. He's, you know, he's not going to be back. What's really left at this point? You know, the bullpen, I suppose, would be the focus now for Anthopoulos?
Yeah, absolutely. It's the clear-cut number one priority. And I think the team would still probably like to upgrade at second base. Anthopoulos kind of mentioned earlier this week he doesn't necessarily know if that upgrade is out there. So that's kind of on the back burner a little bit. But easily the number one priority for this team right now is the bullpen. I mean, the bullpen last year was supposed to be a major strength for this team, ended up being a major weakness. And, you know, they've lost their closer in Casey Jansen. He's a free agent right now. He's not expected to return. And, you know, Dustin McGowan, another guy who was a setup man for them last year, he's also not expected to return. So really, they don't have anyone right now for those eighth and ninth innings, at least from the kind of the right-hand side. They do have two lefties in Brett Cecil and Aaron Loop who were there, but they really need to add a bona fide closer, and they also need to add a power right-handed arm to go into that setup role as well. So there's still a lot of work that has to be done there. And as we saw throughout the 2014 season and in the playoffs, bullpens are extremely important. And the Blue Jays are lacking that lockdown eighth and ninth inning guys right now.
Now, to wit, we have seen back-end relievers now kind of the story of this winter meetings. I mean, that was largely how we kicked things off with Andrew Miller and David Robertson. And now we see, you know, the Astros have gotten in the mix and plucked a few big names off the market. Who's out there at this point for Toronto, and how aggressive, how quickly do you see Anthopoulos moving on some of these names?
I think the big dilemma that the Blue Jays are having right now is that they're really kind of they're trying to do some internal evaluations whether they're better off spending big on one of those second-tier guys that's still on the market, whether it's a Luke Gregerson, Pat Neshek, or if they're going to try and go the bargain route and maybe go for guys who are looking to kind of reestablish some value, whether it's a Jason Mott or someone like that. I mean, there's multiple options out there. There are a lot of relievers available this winter that are still out there. I mean, Miller and Robertson were easily the top two guys on that market. The Blue Jays were never really expected to be major players for those guys, but now that they're off the board, perhaps there'll be some movement in those second and third tier groups. And so they're trying to find a way to best allocate those resources, but I wouldn't be surprised if they bring in a couple of different guys to probably compete for that closer's job, and then the loser might end up in the eighth inning or whatever. But I don't think they're going to go for that, you know, closer that is really proven and going to earn a lot of money. I think they're going to have to take some gambles and try and hope to buy low and get some high upside there.
Okay, we started by talking about the Russell Martin deal. What does that do for Deano Navarro? Where are they with him? It seems like that story is kind of fluid day to day.
Yeah, and the thing with Navarro is that he's coming off a great year. I mean, when the Blue Jays signed him a year ago, there was a lot of doubt as to whether or not he would be able to handle the everyday duties behind the plate. It's something he hadn't done in several years, but he proved a lot of those critics wrong. But Martin, he's a workhorse. I mean, he's a guy who likes to play almost every day. He's going to be in there at least four out of every five games. There's some debate as to whether or not he's going to catch R.A. Dickey, but with a knuckleball. But besides that, I mean, he's a guy who you expect to be in the lineup every day. So this isn't a situation where there's a lot of playing time for Navarro. The one upside for him, if he was still on the team next year, is that there could be some at-bats available at DH. You know, Justin Smoke was a guy who was brought in to play some first and DH as well. Navarro probably has a bit of a better bat than he does, so he could get some time there. But the priority for this team is still to try and use him as a trade chip to possibly get one of those late-inning relievers, possibly get a setup guy in return. The market hasn't really developed the way I think the Blue Jays were hoping, but there's still plenty of time, and I think when the dust settles on the free agent market and some other guys move, I think that's when you could see maybe a January deal or later this month in December, a deal for Navarro to fill some of those holes in the bullpen.
Okay, as we wrap this thing up, Gregor, everybody likes depth at starting pitching. Aaron Sanchez got his cup of coffee. We saw him 24 relief appearances. Bullpen, maybe rotation opportunity for him this year. And Daniel Norris, how does he fit in the picture?
Yeah, Sanchez is going to be the favorite to go in and win that fifth spot. I mean, when the Blue Jays traded Jay Happ to Seattle for Michael Saunders, it was really with an eye on giving an opportunity to Sanchez, who has been one of the top prospects in this system for a number of years now. But he really broke through last year when he got a shot in the bullpen. I think he even exceeded expectations from a lot of people, even though the expectations were already high. Now they'd like to see what he can do in the rotation. I mean, that's really where his future lies. So it should be his job, but he's going to get some competition from Norris. And Norris was actually the guy who, on a lot of people's reports and MLB.com's reports as well, actually surpassed Sanchez last year in terms of the list of prospects in the system. By the end of the year, Norris was ranked number one, Sanchez was ranked number two. So he's a guy who has a big, bright future as well. I would expect him to probably start in AAA Buffalo, but as we all know, you can never get through a season with just five starters. So at some point during the year, he's going to play a really big role in this team.
Okay, Gregor, a lot going on with this team, and they're going to score a lot of runs this summer up in Toronto. And you might just take some of this nice San Diego weather home with you.
Yeah, I'd like
to
that.
Toronto. All right, with Bill Chastain as we talk about the Tampa Bay Rays at winter meetings. And normally, you know, we reserve winter meetings for talk about trades and maybe free agent signings, and yet with the Rays, the conversation this offseason is about a complete changing of the guard. And, you know, Joe Maddon gone now with the Cubs, Matt Silverman taking more of a leadership role, I suppose. How smooth has that transition been in the front office?
Thus far, it seems to be pretty seamless. Pretty much of a seamless transition. I mean, Matt Silverman has been there all along with the Rays. He came in when Andrew Friedman did, and he's been sitting in, you know, at these winter meetings and other things for many years as the team president. But it's kind of an odd transition to go from team president to essentially the GM. But he seems to be grabbing it pretty well, and he's already made a lot of moves. One of them was bringing in the new manager, Kevin Cash, which pretty big shoes to fill for Joe Maddon. But, you know, I think there's a sense that maybe it's a good time to have a new voice in the clubhouse. And even talking to Joe the other day, Joe Maddon, I saw him out in the lobby, and he mentioned, you know, sometimes things get a little bit stale, you know. And 9 years, you know, maybe just hearing a little, you know, hearing it come from a different guy. Kevin Cash has a lot of energy. They think he's a smart guy, maybe some new ideas. So I think it's something they're looking forward to.
It's funny to hear Joe Maddon say that something can get stale because, boy, he puts a lot of effort into making sure that that never happens, right? That was kind of his hallmark.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you can't say enough about the job he did there. You know, he basically changed the culture, or was a big part of changing a losing culture with some of what he did. And I know he didn't do it all by himself, but he was at the front of that.
Yeah. 9 years of Maddon and Andrew Friedman, that face changes. Kevin Cash as the new skipper. But, you know, from the sounds of it, there aren't a ton of big changes that they feel need to be made overall with the club, right?
Well, one of the big obstacles I felt like they faced going into the offseason was looking at last year, a season many people felt like they were going to contend for the American League East title, and a lot of people even thought they would go to the World Series, and instead they had their first losing season since 2007. So you've got a lot of those same players in place, and going into the offseason they had to look at those guys and see which ones they felt, you know, could rebound from those seasons, which one couldn't. And I think they're fairly confident of the group they've got. You know, when you talk to them, you feel like that, you know, they talk about their simulated games and all this stuff, all the stuff they do behind the scenes to see what their season's going to turn like. They felt like there was very remote chances of the outcomes they got last year. So I think they're looking for a lot of rebounding, and who knows, a big part of that also will be if they don't have the injuries they had last year as well.
Right. Simply health would be like almost
exactly
an acquisition for this team.
Exactly.
They do have a surplus of outfielders, and there is talk, you know, certain, I think there's interest to guys like Matt Joyce. Where are they right now in terms of who they feel are key guys integral to the future of this team and who might be legitimately on the block?
Well, they never talk about who is getting traded and who's not, but I know in talking with Matt Silverman yesterday, you know, first off, starting with of the group, there's six of them. And of that group, Matt Joyce and David DeJesus make the most money. And, of course, when you're a low-payroll team, you know, that's usually the guys with the bullseye to start with. And, like I said, in talking to Silverman yesterday, he had high praise for Desmond Jennings, even though he had an off season last year. And the same thing with Will Myers. And so I get the feeling from what he said about those two, you can count them in the mix. And then when you put on top of that, you know, the fact that DeJesus and Joyce make the money, and you know, Joyce obviously is arbitration eligible. Then you got Brandon Guyer and Kevin Kiermaier. So, you know, if I was to handicap the thing, I'd say the four guys you'd see in there at the end of this thing was maybe Joyce and or one or the other, Joyce or DeJesus, and then, you know, you pick from those other four.
Yeah, and with Will Myers, you know, the injuries, the health situation last year was a great disappointment, I know, but they have confidence. They feel like this year he returns to that rookie form that was so impressive.
Well, they do feel that way, and a lot of what is forgotten in last year is he hurt his hand early in the season before he had the fracture that put him on the disabled list for a long time. So he was playing in pain for a long time. He's a guy that, you know, he has a knockout punch. And, you know, if there's one guy that can single-handedly improve the offense and maybe even help out Longoria some by giving him some support in the lineup, it's Will Myers. You know, if he can get back to where he was his rookie season, that would go a long way towards seeing an improved Rays offense.
What about behind the plate? They need a little help at catcher, maybe?
They would like to. They have been vocal about looking for some help at catcher. I know they brought in Ryan Hannigan last year. Again, he was another guy. He was coming off injuries last year, and then he had more injuries last season. So, you know, is he going to be durable enough to be the guy? And then behind him, they have Kurt Casale, who came up as a rookie last year. But other than that, you know, they're a little thin there. So they're looking around to see what could be had at catcher.
Any names you're hearing as possibilities?
No, again, they're pretty
pretty tight-lipped.
They keep the poker face pretty well.
Yeah. What about kids coming up? You know, and it's a funny time of year to really get too involved in that, because we see it a lot with teams. You know, these kids who we're looking forward to seeing end up being chips to get bigger pieces to come in. But who might we see play a role this next year for Tampa Bay?
Well, for starters, there's starters. Alex Colome, he's out of options, so I would look for him either to contend for a spot in the starting rotation or maybe be a piece of the bullpen. You know, he's got the big fastball. And then also Nathan Carnes, who they acquired right before the season last year. He got a start at the end of the year, and he looked pretty darn good. You know, of course, you got Matt Moore coming back in midsummer, so, you know, the whole rotation might shake out a little different then. Other than that, I think, you know, you might – get to see a little bit of Timmy Beckham this year. You probably would have seen him last year had he not hurt his knee. You know, everybody knows him as the top pick of the draft in 2008. So I think this might be a season you see him, and he might give him a little something as far as, you know, a speed boost and some of the things that they thought he could bring him when they drafted him all those years ago.
Okay, there was one name that was attached to the Rays briefly this week, and that was Ryan Howard, which seemed a bit of a reach. I think there were some contractual things that made it perhaps a realistic possibility. Is that a legitimate potential for them, or was that just sort of some side conversation?
I think it's mostly side conversation. I know all of us kind of speculate about it because you hear that the Phillies want to move on, yeah, and he has the big contract, and so everybody says, would he be the guy to come in and be the DH if they were able to eat? The Phillies were able to eat some of his $60 million that he's due. Of course, yesterday, Matt Silverman said, you know, I asked him if he was looking at a DH instead of what they did last year, which was, you know, basically just pick spots and go mm-hmm. with matchups. And he said, well, we didn't have a whole lot of luck doing that in the past, which, you know, and that he was referring
Luke
Pat
Scott.
Burrell and Luke Scott, who both got, you know, pretty good contracts relative to the Rays to come there.
Yeah, so probably not a real possibility,
right,
at least
uh-huh.
right now. Okay.
Good fodder for the winter meetings, right?
Yeah. Well, what is the winter meetings if we don't have some good fodder?
Right, though? Exactly.
All right, Bill Chastain, always fun, and good luck with this new regime, Kevin Cash and Company, at the top of the food chain.
Thanks, Dave.
All right. With Ian Brown, and oh boy, here we go, Red Sox right at the center of everything. Very active pre-winter meetings, made some huge moves, Pablo Sandoval, Hanley Ramirez, etc. But all the talk has been about John Lester, John Lester down to the Cubs. What does that mean for the Red Sox?
Well, it means the Red Sox are going to have to find a pitcher and do so pretty quickly here before some of the other better ones go off the market. Because, you know, obviously John was kind of plan A for the Red Sox. They did everything they could to attack that. And, you know, they just weren't willing to go quite as high financially as the Cubs were. And now they, you know, they're probably going to have to make a trade and probably sign somebody.
Justin Masterson has been bandied about. They have reached out, made an offer, as I understand it. Where does that stand?
Yeah, you know, Justin Masterson is a good alternative for them. But to me, he's more of a middle to lower rotation guy. I mean, with Lester gone, the Red Sox really need a one or a two right now. So, you know, Masterson would be a nice piece. He's one of a number of pitchers they're talking to. But I think now you really look at the Red Sox and they're going to attack that trade market. They're going to talk to the Phillies about Cole Hamels. They're going to talk to the Reds about some of the pitchers they have, Detroit, the Washington Nationals. I mean, there's teams out there who might trade a starting pitcher, and the Red Sox have already talked to every one of them leading up to the winter meetings and at the winter meetings, but now they're going to intensify those talks.
Okay, so obviously trade would be the preferred route. Is there any chance some of the bigger free agent names, the Max Scherzers and company, they might be in those sweepstakes?
Well, considering the Red Sox only went to 135 on Lester, I find it hard to believe they're going to bring Max Scherzer to Boston. I mean, you're talking about a contract that I think is going to go 160, 170, maybe even 180 million wouldn't shock me. James Shields, that's an intriguing one. I think that he might be in their price range, and he's a guy who's pitched much of his career in the American League East. He could be a nice fit. I'd say Shields, yes, decent possibility. Scherzer, I'd be just stunned if the Red Sox signed Max Scherzer.
So the clear focus, starting pitching still. What other ancillary pieces is Ben Cherington working on?
Yeah, backup catcher, lefty reliever, maybe another left-handed bat off the bench. They're in pretty good shape as an offense, and now it's just kind of filling out that bullpen. But, you know, that rotation, they need at least two, possibly three starting pitchers. So that's going to continue to be a focus of the Red Sox here as we go forward.
What about re-signing David Ross, a possibility?
Yeah, David Ross is a possibility. You know, I think that now that John Lester's with the Cubs, I think the Cubs are going to have a lot of interest in Ross because Lester is so comfortable working with him. I think ideally the Red Sox would like to have a left-handed hitting backup catcher. But the problem with catching is there just aren't many on the market. There's barely any on the free agent market. So if the Red Sox are going to get a backup catcher, it's probably going to come in a trade.
All right, so what do you see them getting done in these remaining moments of the winter meetings?
Yeah, I think they'd like to bring a pitcher back to Boston with them. I mean, they're just going to, you know.
Is there pressure to get that done right now?
There is pressure, you know, externally. There's a lot of pressure from the fan base, and the Red Sox have their big Christmas at Fenway event coming up on Saturday, and that's usually a festive event. So I think that they would maybe like to make a splash by then to show the fans that, hey, John Lester might be gone, but we're as committed as ever to winning a World Series next year. So, yeah, I think they'd like to get some pitching soon because, you know, right now, ever since they traded John Lester and John Lackey back on July 31st, there's been a big hole at the top of that rotation. I mean, you have Clay Buchholz, who's a very good pitcher when healthy. You have Joe Kelly, who's a nice, you know, third or fourth starter. But, you know, other than that, you really need some frontline pitching if you're going to get back to contending for a World Series.
Okay, then, as we wrap this up, we know what their intentions are. What about some guys who might be able to contribute from the system or names that maybe aren't so high on the radar right now?
Yeah, that's what the Red Sox are excited about is they do think they have a pretty good wealth of young starting pitchers. And they look at a bunch of guys who are going to compete for a spot in spring training, maybe the fifth spot in the rotation. You're talking about Matt Barnes. You're talking about Anthony Renato, Alan Webster, Ruby De La Rosa, Henry Owens. So the Red Sox are excited about their young pitching. You know, some of them had an audition last year and weren't quite as consistent as they hoped, but the Red Sox hope that experience they got at the big league level last year, they'll be that much more ready this year. So there is some excitement in the organization about the next wave of Red Sox pitchers.
Okay, Ian, I know you've been busy, and I know you've got a lot more to get done yet. Thanks so much for stopping by. Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras, the American League East.